It is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 159. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I am joined first by BYU Sports Nation's Jerem Jordan. We talk about what he saw in the UCF game and what he anticipates seeing against Nevada. Then up, it's my brother Matt and I to talk about some BYU Cougars making waves in the pros. We also recap Central Florida and preview Nevada, and of course answer your tweet bag questions. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. Email us adam@loyalcougars.com and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the podcast, Jerem Jordan of BYU Sports Nation fame. Jerem, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I want to say this is number four. So I'd like to think that on the overall standings table, I'm climbing somewhere.
You know, I'm going to have to look that up as we're talking, but I will tell you this. I do have a slight beef with you.
Oh, what's up?
So last time we had a beef, it's because you unfollowed us on Twitter, which was...
No, it was my daughter. Remember, she accidentally unfollowed her.
Right. We all believe that. But this time, I think it was on Monday's show where you basically said, hey, East Coast, the next opponent's name is Nevada, not Nevada.
Yeah.
As someone that grew up on the East Coast, let me say this. We've been saying Nevada since it was still part of Mexico.
Yeah.
Or Oregon, since it was still a trail. I'm just kidding.
Listen, I say Louisville, like the people say it.
Because
I think it's funny. And like South Carolina, my dad's from North Carolina, so I'm like, I have 8% Southerner in me.
Okay, there you go.
But yeah, come on, it's Nevada and Oregon.
No.
That's how the people say it. That's how you say it. Come on.
I agree with you. I just can't. This is actually the fifth time. See, my daughter, she does not agree with you, Jerem.
Oh, that's our demo too on BYU Sports Nation. So that's not good.
Your demo is four month old.
It's 4 to 8 months.
4 to 8 months.
4 to 8 months. Our demo.
Yeah. That's a good market to go after.
We're hitting it really well, by the way.
This is your fifth time on the show.
Fifth. Okay. Fifth awesome. Time. I thought it was four. That's great.
Fifth time and fourth time this year. You lead 2014.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Man, I'm on pace to win the triple crown of the Rise and Shout podcast or something.
Yeah, or something. So let's head on to much more serious news. We've got a Twitter question. We call it the tweet bag on this show. And our first Twitter question came about 2.5 seconds after I asked for Twitter questions. And it says, who is better looking between Spencer Litton and Jerem Jordan? And we'll stop there.
That one's easy.
This one is Spencer. This one is from at Jerem Jordan.
I typed that during a break of BYU Sports Nation today, actually. That's what happened.
So then it gets worse, Jerem, because then Justin Sweeney, that's at Justin D. Sweeney.
A regular tweet bagger.
He asks, I think you should rank all previous guests by looks.
Oh, wow.
That seems like too much work. I'm just going to say, because you've come on more, that we're going to give the title to you over Spencer, though his hair is spectacular. But otherwise, yeah. I think you got him.
I'd have to go with Franchuk, probably, if you had to.
Oh, okay.
Name number one. Right, that's a good looking dude.
That's a pretty good pick right there. That's a pretty good pick.
No one wore shorts like Jason Franchuk, by the way.
What's that? So I'm sorry, say that again.
No one wore shorts. No other media member wore shorts like Jason Franchuk.
That I have no doubt of. Especially seeing who else covers the Cougars. I'm sorry, Dick. I was just kidding. So, in all seriousness, you guys have been talking a lot on your show, and we talked a bit on the podcast last week about, of course, everything goes haywire against Utah State. Central Florida, if you had told me ahead of time who would be injured, that we would have a chance to go into overtime in the last play of the game, I would have thought, there's no way we're within two touchdowns. So tell me why the fans that are kind of all you know, fire Bronco, this is the worst season ever. Tell me why they're wrong, Jerem.
Yeah, I think that BYU's been dealt a bad hand right now, you know, just random, crazy, freak, crap hit the fan injuries, right?
Yeah.
So the main guys, to some of the, I mean, if you, we listed this in a pre-production meeting. If you had ranked like the top 10 BYU football players, I dare say that like the top six or seven have at least missed one game and may miss further. You know, like it's been unbelievably bad. And the fact that BYU was even in that game was amazing. I mean, the effort that they put, you're throwing Taki Taki and Warner out there at linebacker. You're putting some other guys on special teams. You're relying on Algernon Brown and Paul Asika in the run game. You have a kid from Tippenogus High School in Orem calling the shots at quarterback. I mean, because BYU was up 14 and because BYU lost, people got bummed. What if BYU had been blown out? Then what? The fact that they were in that game gave me encouragement that BYU can compete and possibly go 4-2, 5-1, maybe 6-0, who knows, down the backstretch and actually have something to show for this season.
So Jordan Leslie was quoted in several media stories. I don't know if that was today or yesterday. Maybe it was this morning. Basically saying everybody had this thought because of the fast start about going undefeated, and now everything else seems like a disappointment. Now, he's speaking of people outside of the program, and then he said, our goal is to go to win the rest of our games and then win a bowl game. You just said, you know, they've got that chance. How realistic is it with this squad, as it's assuming that, you know, we don't have nine other guys go down with ankle injuries, assuming that some relative normal health between now and the end of the season, how likely is it that they win the next six?
Yeah, I'd say there's a fair chance. I wouldn't go great or good because it's just tough to win a bunch of games. 11-2 would be unbelievably awesome. Like with Taysom Hill, I would have taken 11 wins. But with health, like 11 wins is amazing. 10 plus, I'll take 10 plus every single year. Sign me up right now. And if at the beginning of the year you had told me, okay, you get 11 wins right now this season, or you can risk it, I would have taken 11 right then and there. So I'd give them a fair shot. The good news is this schedule is not 2013. There's not a Wisconsin Notre Dame looming where you go, you know what, those are probably losses. Maybe BYU pulls off a win there. But given the personnel and given the matchups that BYU has going down the stretch, I wouldn't be surprised if they pull off all six. I said on Monday, as we looked at the back half, I said on BYU Sports Nation that I thought BYU had a good shot at going 5-1. Because they will beat Middle Tennessee, UNLV, and Savannah State. So you're up to 7 right there. Now, what do you do Saturday against Nevada, not Nevada, Boise State, and Cal? Do you go 0-3, 1-2, 2-1, 3-0? What you do in those three will decide whether you go 8, 9, or 10 wins. I'm thinking if BYU pulls off 9 wins, including a bowl game, good season. Should have been more. Taysom got hurt. A bunch of people got hurt. Whatever. I'd take 9 wins. If BYU gets to 10, fantastic.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is, and there is a chance here for, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where, you know, with Taysom, the goal would have been outscore everybody. Now the defense has to play a bigger role, and as we saw with Taki Taki and Fred Warner, some of these really young, highly recruited players may all of a sudden step into bigger roles than probably they would have if Taysom stays healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And Michael Alisa, we taped an interview with him that will air tomorrow, Thursday on BYU Sports Nation, where he said that he's been cross-trained at the Sam linebacker as well, which is Tabua's spot. So you may see more Michael Alisa / Fred Warner at that position as well.
Oh,
let's
wow.
not forget other guys that have stepped up. Travis Tuiloma had 3 tackles for loss against UCF. Underrated guy, Brian Polian this week, Nevada's head coach, said he looks like he could bench Volkswagen. I was like, hey, yeah, the D-line, someone giving the D-line credit, that's great. Logan Taiele got some pressure. It's like, who are these guys? What? I think the defense has some playmakers to be able to play. There's still Rob Daniel. There's still Michael Davis in the secondary. Craig Bill sounds like he's progressing nicely and probably will play. We'll see, but it sounds like he could play. Dallin Levitt and Jamal Williams haven't practiced as much. Hopefully they can go. If they can't, that's a big blow. But BYU's got a shot to compete in every game. That's the good news, is there's not a game that BYU can't win left on the field.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely, as you said, there's no Notre Dame or Wisconsin looming on this schedule. What can you tell us about Nick Kurtz? He played, apparently, like in two plays a couple of games ago, though I don't remember seeing him, and then he didn't play against UCF. Is there any chance we see him, or do you think this is he's going to medical redshirt and start his junior year next year?
Yeah, it's official. Prior to the UCF game, Spencer Linton mentioned on Countdown to Kickoff that they did shut him down. Earlier that week, Spencer was told by Bronco one-on-one that Kurtz did play three plays against Utah State, reported in pregame and after the game that his foot was very sore, so that was not good. So they did plan three plays, so it appeared to break his redshirt, but according to Bronco, prior to UCF, they had to make a decision. Do we redshirt? They could still redshirt him, and they chose to redshirt him. So he will have 2 years to play, starting 2015 and then 16.
Well, it's good and bad, right? Because two more years of him, and he's supposed to be a dynamic player. It would be nice if Christian Stewart had another weapon, but not bad to have 2 years of him coming back. So let's focus on Nevada. See, I pulled that off.
There you go.
See, focusing on Nevada, they have had a really bizarre year where,
oh, yeah,
depending on which game you watched of them or which box score you looked at, you might say they're terrible. And then there are other games you might have seen or looked at the box score and said, wow, that team's pretty decent. Is this something where you think we don't actually really know how good they are, or do you think this is just who they are? They are going to be a schizophrenic Jekyll or Hyde type of outfit for the whole year?
Yeah, I think we know. Here's what we know based on my study of them. I've watched a couple of their games, Arizona, San Jose State, a lot of the Boise State game. I'm just finished reading the game notes today. Cody Fajardo is maybe the best quarterback the BYU will face this year. Like, he is the real deal. No one else in FBS has 8,000 career pass yards, 2,000-plus rush yards. He's a four-year starter. He was, we were told today by the Nevada play-by-play, he was about 80-85% last year in the game. He's 100% this year. Michael Elisa told us he's getting the edge. You know, he's getting around the edge and beating guys. He's legit. I like the receivers, too, and I looked this one up. The top four receivers, and they have some good ones, and Henderson and Richardson and Turner, and their tight end Gibson's a red zone machine. 89% of the passes go to those four guys. So you know where the ball is going. It's going to those four guys. Their rush game's okay, but their defense, and their offense is, I would say it's good. Their defense is not good at all. They're giving up 427 total offense. Their pass defense is atrocious. So there's an opportunity for BYU there, for Christian Stewart specifically, to wreak havoc. And that's what the question is. I haven't decided this week who needs to play better, the offense or the defense for BYU. The defense, obviously, riddled with injuries, so you'd think they'd take a step back from what they were against, say, Virginia and Utah State, giving up 30-plus, 450-plus in total offense. Or does the offense have to kind of outshoot the other team? I'm leaning more that way. But Nevada's three losses are by a touchdown or less. Five to Boise State in a shootout. Seven at Arizona, which actually looks like a decent loss, if there is such a thing, and then 7-point loss to Colorado State, who's 5-1.
Yeah, that loss to Boise, I think, is going to haunt them a little bit, because they definitely had a chance in that game, and of course, gave up 51 points.
51 at home.
At home. I mean, those are some crazy numbers between turnovers and just not very good defense in that particular game. One of the things fans are talking a lot about on Twitter and Cougar Board and other places is the home attendance, Jerem. So this is going to be a Saturday night game, starts 8:15 locally. I haven't actually even looked at what the weather's going to be. Is this just something that, with these independent schedules and some random opponents and weird start times, Is this just going to be how it is, or is this a reflection of something bigger? You know, the whole, well, I can sit at home and watch it in HD. Why do I want to go sit next to some weirdo yelling nonsense?
I think that might be part of it. I think it is. I mean, everyone's a rich guy, right? In the way they watch football. You have your big TV, you have your comfortable furniture, you have your food and drinks. Like, you don't have to go against traffic. I mean, there is something to being at a game, but it's lost its luster for sure. 821 kicks do not help. That is for sure. Even the Virginia game, though. Pristine condition, great afternoon. Thought that would be a sellout. It was not. I don't think this is a huge issue or problem. I think BYU is getting enough in the stand. And BYU, they want to sell out. I know David Almadova in athletic marketing, and they're doing everything they can to push that. If people don't show up, they don't show up, despite their best efforts. And I think that BYU as an athletic program is catering to that relationship with ESPN, which is it's better to be in league with ESPN than it is Craig Thompson, despite maybe an 8:15 kick occasionally. Because then you get stuff, you get your name out there, and everyone knows the benefits of you.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. I was on a business trip, had my BYU T-shirt on, and one of the guys that I was with, who is a big college football fan but certainly doesn't care one way or not about BYU, said to me it was the night of the Utah State game, and he said, "Oh, I'm watching that tonight." And I asked him why. He said, "Well, there's no other football on."
So whatever, we don't care the reasons to do it.
That's excellent. Then, of course, I had to see him the next morning because it was over a weekend, and he wanted to rehash one of the worst games I've ever watched emotionally, so I didn't want to do that. So let's switch sports for a second and talk hoops with my last couple minutes with you. This year is kind of a strange year coming in. Matt Carlino transfers, which is one of the least surprising.
Wait, what?
Matt Carlino, you may not have heard that. He transferred.
When did that happen?
Yeah, it was a few months ago. It was one of the least surprising surprises ever. So he transfers. Collinsworth coming back from an injury. Don't know exactly when and how much we'll get of him. A few other eligibility things going on. Is this the year where the hoops team can sneak up on fans in the WCC, where maybe there isn't as much hype as there has been in previous years? Or do you think we're still a year away from this team really challenging for the WCC crown?
I think Gonzaga upgraded so much that it's gonna be hard to beat them.
Yeah,
I really think that. I know that they are the kings, you know, of the rock, and you got to take them out. They added Arvydas Sabonis's kid. They added the leading scorer and rebounder from USC. They got Kyle Wilcher from Kentucky. Basically known as the white guy with Anthony Davis and that crew, freshman. I mean, they got some ballers. Granted, I think BYU is going to compete for the championship. Maybe Gonzaga stumbles. Maybe BYU overachieves and wins it. Whether they win the WCC tournament or regular season is of less significance to me than if they actually win a game or two in the tournament.
Right.
But you're right. In terms of, like, sneak up ability, it's all about what the expectation is, right? And you're right. We have no idea. We have no idea what Corbin Kabusi is going to do, what Isaac Nielsen, Jamal H., Chase Fisher, any of these guys will do. What we know is that Tyler Haws can get buckets in bunches. And I love that SI.com came out yesterday and said, hey, we project him to be the nation's leading scorer. That's exciting for BYU hoops.
Absolutely.
But you're right. I don't know what we're going to get. I've seen them practice, and I love the athleticism. I don't know how deep the team is. I know they've got 18 guys, but that doesn't necessarily yield depth. But I like the idea of, okay, there's actually a front court. There's not like Mika, Worthington, and Austin, and Josh Sharp. You know,
yeah, right,
you've actually got, like, who knows how much Josh Sharp plays? Luke Worthington. Maybe they are the veterans on the team. I don't know. But it is very exciting and unique because you have so many newcomers mixed in with who's the guy that's going to be your all-time leading scorer, and Kyle Collinsworth, who I think eventually will be an NBA draft.
Yeah, yeah. It could be very exciting this year. I'm actually very, very excited for the year because there's so many different things that could play out. Get you out on one last question. Over, under 2.5 takedowns of a Gonzaga player by Corbin Kafusi?
I'll go under, because Bronson will probably be like, hey, just so you know, it's just weird.
It didn't work out well.
No, I don't know if it was or not, but you know what? You could probably go either way on that. But that's going to be fun. He went with number 44. The guy Corbin knows what he's doing. And by the way, I met him last week. Just looking at it, that is a giant human being. Like to have a walk-on of that size who may start. He might start the first game. Like, he's that athletic. I don't know how good he is, but he's that athletic. The dude's a beast, and BYU's lucky to get him.
Yeah, I had a friend who met him not too long ago and said, shaking his hand, basically, and my friend has a young daughter who's, I think, 3, said basically it was like his daughter shaking his hand. You know, just like the hand just kind of disappeared, his hand, when he shook his hand. So he's a...
Jeff Chapman thinks his hands are big, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, well, awesome. Thanks, Jerem, for coming on. Of course, we'll follow you on Twitter at Jerem Jordan. Even if you're not exactly sure how TweetBag works, where you're not supposed to submit questions for yourself.
Oh.
But anyway.
Wait, what?
That's okay. We'll forgive you this time. And then, of course.
I just wanted to spark the conversation, you know, just like kindle the fire.
That's true. And you did. Sweeney followed you. Sweeney followed you there.
If I beat Justin Sweeney to the punch, I'm pretty quick.
Yeah, that is. I seriously had tweeted it out. I hit tweet, and then all of a sudden, ding. I'm like, I don't think I've ever gotten one that fast. But of course, if you're not watching Jerem and crew, sometimes when Brian comes on last week, it's a little jarring at first. I'll be honest.
You're telling me.
He's screaming stuff, and but he's actually been on this podcast a couple of years ago. We'll have to have him again on
Yeah, Brian. I bet he'd love to be on. He's great.
Yeah, he is great. But of course, check out BYU Sports Nation, which you can see on BYU TV. You can listen to on BYU radio. And of course, you can do a podcast, but I'd listen to our podcast first. But of course, you guys have it every day.
Hey, that's fair. That's fair.
So anyway, thanks, Jerem, and we'll definitely have you on again soon.
Thank you.
Podcast episode 159. I'm Adam Mangum. You're Matt Mangum. What's up?
So, what is up? I mean, what's going on right now? I don't even know.
This is our fourth podcast in a row where one of us was traveling for business.
Yep.
Fourth or fifth in a row.
We are on the road.
We are that dedicated to this podcast.
That's right.
So, Matt, I wanted to open up with something with you. Last Thursday night, there was a BYU football game.
Oh, is that when that was?
But you didn't see that game, which usually I would mock you for, except in this case, you were at your first ever regular season NFL football game.
I was. I attended my first ever regular season NFL game. Successfully avoided the BYU score until I was able to watch it the next morning.
Really? You pulled that off?
It was tough, and to be honest with you, you know who almost let the cat out of the bag was our father. But I was able to keep that contained. They at one point put highlights up on the screen at the game, and I had to put my head down and cover up my ears and scream for 2 or 3 minutes until it was over.
Wow.
I wanted to be able to watch. I wanted to be able to legitimately watch the BYU game and experience the emotions. But really, all I found is that made me feel empty inside.
That's been the last couple of weeks, really, hasn't it?
Yep.
A lot of emptiness. Well, how was your, besides, you know, having to avoid BYU highlights and score? How was your first NFL game experience?
Oh, amazing! Awesome. It was as loud as any crowd at any sporting event I've ever been at. The Texans almost completed a comeback after being down by 3 scores early. JJ Watt is a beast, but, this getting to see the speed of the pro game in person, and experience all that was a ton of fun.
And you saw a good game.
Yeah, it was a great game. I'd say if you have an opportunity, in the words of Ferris Bueller, I highly recommend it.
Is Ferris Bueller the only person that said I highly recommend it?
Yes. Actually, every person who says that is quoting Ferris Bueller, and those who don't cite him are plagiarizing.
Wow. I did not know that. That is fascinating.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't know that.
Well, I'm a little disappointed with myself, to be honest.
Well, now you know how the rest of us feel.
Well played, sir.
Hey, you throw up a softball like that. I mean, come on. What am I supposed to do?
That's true, but I've seen you play softball. It's not a guarantee you'll hit it.
It's not pretty.
It is not pretty. So, Matt, let's jump right into Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, first up, in case you hadn't known this before, Jimmer is awesome.
Jimmer is awesome.
He is lighting it up in the preseason for the New Orleans Pelicans, which I know I've said this like 3 podcasts in a row. I just can't say that. And I feel like I'm talking like we're doing this podcast in a movie that's set in the year like 2025. And it's some ridiculous NBA name that I made up.
I don't know. I'll tell you what. I think it's cool that they went with that's a really non-traditional mascot.
Why is that cool again?
I think it's awesome. How many teams are there out there that are the Wildcats and it's all the same names.
Yeah, yeah. I love those original, one of a kind names like the Miami Heat and the Orlando Magic.
Okay, the Orlando Magic is a little bit lame, but Miami Heat?
You're right.
That's cool.
Orlando Magic. What about the Toronto Raptors? Does that go as the lamest?
Well, the problem is I think if you go with a non-traditional mascot, you've got to have a real good, there's got to be a tie to it to the city.
I actually believe.
So like the Utah Jazz, for example, Jazz, that's a non-traditional name for a team.
Yes.
But when they left New Orleans, they probably should have just changed it.
Yes. I hear the top two choices were polygamous and pioneers, but
I think you have a winner either way there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So Jimmer is lighting it up on the podcast over the last couple weeks. I've been pessimistic about Jimmer's fate in the NBA, and you have been optimistic. Matt, do you feel vindicated?
I think it's a little bit early for that. The potential, I believe, has always been there.
Yes.
And it's all about the right opportunity for Jimmer Fredette. And hopefully what we're seeing right now is that this is going to be that opportunity. Yes. I mean, the guy, he can hit shots from anywhere on the floor.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, he can be sitting in the third row. He'll be draining it still.
Yeah.
So, also in the news, former Cougars turned pro. Are you, are you doing bubble wrap? What are you doing?
I was just adjusting the way I was sitting. I apologize. I am sitting on some bubble wrap. So.
Well, who isn't? So Matt, Ziggy Ansah, who had been slowed a little bit by recovering from off-season surgery, wins the NFC Defensive Player of the Week with 2.5 sacks. Looked like the monster that he looked at times last year, as well as, of course, at times during his short career at BYU. Do you wish the Texans had been playing the Lions?
That would have been a ton of fun to see. I'd love to see him in action. I think it would have been hard. Because it was easy for me to not cheer for the Colts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey,
that didn't take very much effort at all.
No.
I think that would have added a layer of complexity to my first NFL experience that I'm not sure I would have been prepared to handle.
Until I lived in Indiana, I had nothing against Colts fans. Now I have a lot of things against Colts fans. So, sorry any Colts fans that listen.
We have a couple, so be careful there.
Yeah, well, whatever. So Matt also in the Cougars turn pro. Now, Jeremy Guthrie pitches for the Kansas City Royals, was briefly with BYU, and also pitched for Stanford, which, well, None of us is perfect. Won the third game of the American League Championship Series, five innings pitched. Earlier today, we're recording this on Wednesday evening. Spoiler alert, the Royals swept the Orioles, which I was definitely rooting for the Royals, Guthrie being part of it, but also I hate the Orioles. So,
how can you hate the Orioles?
Two things. They're in the American League East, so rivalry with the Red Sox. And I can't stand Buck Showalter. He just bugs me.
Yeah, what is the deal with Buck Showalter?
I don't know. But the Orioles had a very good team this year. It was I thought this would be a much more interesting series than it was. Sweeps are only fun if you're rooting for that team, right? Otherwise, it's kind of lame.
So you're not going to do the whole, like, the Orioles are only in it because it was a down year for the Red Sox thing?
No. No, they had a good team this year, and the Red Sox were terrible. Now, granted, if the Red Sox and Rays had been as good as people thought they were going to be, then yes, it would have possibly been a different year for the Orioles, but they had a good team. They, you know, decent offense, good pitching. I got nothing to say against them.
Fair enough.
So, Matt, what is the most impressive by a pro Mormon athlete this week? Ziggy Ansah's 2.5 sacks. Guthrie going 5 innings, pitching fairly well to help the propel the Royals into the World Series for the first time since 1985, or Jimmer lighting it up in preseason.
I think it's got to be Guthrie, right? I mean, it's a big time stage. It's a playoff game. It's a city that hasn't seen a baseball team this good in 20 years, you know, versus a very early NBA game.
Yes.
And albeit a really good performance defensively, but people have done, you know, I mean, you're going to do that a couple times in your career if you're Ziggy. You're going to have a 2.5 sack game.
Yep, certainly.
But how many times if you're Guthrie do you get to pitch in the league championship series and perform that well on that stage? I mean, so that's got to be the winner out of those three.
I totally agree with you, though I think Ansah's performance was pretty awesome. But again, it's the stage that changes everything. If Ansah has a 2.5 or 3 sack game in the playoffs this year, then that might, for the year.
Yeah, that's a little different.
Rival it. So let's jump back to that UCF game where you said you died inside or something silly like that. I thought you were already dead after the Utah State game.
I was apparently not quite dead.
Okay. So now...
I was only mostly dead.
So... Yes. Yes. Well played again. You were on a roll, man. I don't say that to you often because it's not actually true very often. But tonight, it's you may be onto something. Let me pose it this way. And Jerem and I just talked about this a little bit, but we didn't spend much time on it. Forget the UCF game for a second and rewind back before the season began.
Oh, great! Let's do that. Let's talk about when there was still hope.
Oh, stop it. Couple of things. Name the top four players that you think rapid fire on the offense for BYU.
And I'm pretending that it's beginning of the season?
Beginning of the season. Coming into the year, who are the top four players for BYU's offense?
Taysom, Jamal, Jordan Leslie. I don't know. I'm not sure where I'd go with the fourth one. Probably... I'm not sure what I do with the fourth
Kersley,
one.
Kurtz.
Oh, Kurtz. That's right. That's right. Okay. That's right. That point in the season, I'm still saying Kurtz.
I would have had the same four. On defense, top four. Fua? Is that fair?
Yeah. Fua, Kafusi.
Dane, Bills?
Bills. Fua, Kafusi, Bills. I don't know who the fourth one is there.
Daniel, maybe, or maybe Dallin Leavitt. But coming into the season, I probably wouldn't have said Leavitt.
I would not have said Leavitt.
I might have said Rob Daniel or Jordan Johnson.
Jordan Johnson is probably the fourth one for me.
Now, fast forward to the UCF game. No Taysom Hill. Jamal Williams gets hurt on the very first play of the game to not return. Nick Kurtz broke his foot way back in the day and never played a snap, so you did have Jordan Leslie out of the four we mentioned. Kafusi in the game, but still does not seem 100% to me, though he was much more active in this game. Fua out. Bills gets hurt early on in the game. Jordan Johnson gets hurt early on in the game. In the case of Johnson, he's out for the year, and of course Bills with concussions, it's a little hard to know when he will return, whether it be this week or not. So forget how the game played out. If I told you that all of those players would be out on the road against Central Florida, what would your prediction have been?
Oh, we get killed.
We get killed. So, in light of that, is this UCF loss maybe not as bad as it felt in the moment because we did have the lead? Or is it just bad because the game flow is what the game flow was, so, you know, you can't pretend that it wasn't that way?
I think I have a hard time pretending that it wasn't that way. And the other thing about what happened here that is disappointing for me is that I feel like good football teams, one of the characteristics of a good football team is depth. And I think that talks to being able to play four quarters. It also talks to being able to play consistently over a long season. And, you know, I think we had a picture in our minds of what this team, who this team was and what they were capable of. And now we have some questions.
Well, I'm gonna push back on you a little bit with that one. Outside of maybe Alabama, Oregon, maybe take the top five or six programs in the country. If any team loses six of their top eight players at any point during the season, and in this case, three, four, five of them for the year, you do not hit your potential. I don't care who you are, except in the case, again, of Alabama and a few of these other schools where they've got another five-star guy and behind him a four-star guy, right? Outside of those group, I mean, if you had told me, honestly, that Taysom would be out for the year, I would have said we might not win another game not named Savannah State. So the fact that we are in this one, I actually feel kind of hopeful, honestly, and we'll get to the rest of the season here in a minute. Did we learn anything about the BYU offense in this game that we didn't already know?
I think we're going to see the ball get spread around a little bit differently.
Yes, yes, definitely. Agree with that.
But I think we kind of expected that to happen. Yeah. And I think that the BYU offense figured out some things that they didn't already know. Like, we can run a little bit of a bruising running game.
Yeah, yeah. Brown and Lasique looked pretty good. Now, granted, this was not a great defense they were playing, but on the other hand, we don't play a great defense the rest of the year. You know, we don't have a Notre Dame or a Wisconsin type of defensive unit, right, this year. So, right. Yeah, I agree with you. We learned both of those things. What about the defense? Did we learn anything about the defense that maybe we didn't know or was unclear coming into the UCF game?
I don't know that I saw anything that was really unclear or unknown coming into the UCF game. I think that we have the same concerns that we had going into this game is what we saw happen. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah, the one thing we had talked about this last week on the podcast, we both talked about players that we wanted to see more out of. I mentioned Fred Warner. He looked good, sometimes maybe in the wrong place, but I think that Taki Taki, some of these other guys, young guys, if this defense is going to be better than mediocre, those guys are going to have to step up and play.
I'll tell you what, though, Taki Taki gave me some hope.
Oh yeah, he looked. This is the first time a defensive lineman actually looked like he could generate pressure, right?
Mm-hmm.
By themselves. You know, and that brings me to another question. You're more the defensive guy than I am. Do you believe that we'd be better off with maybe some more depth at linebacker than we have at defensive line, moving Kafusi back to the defensive line? Or do you think that's more disruptive than it is useful this point of the season.
I think putting Kaufusi back on the defensive line plays better to his strengths and probably is a better use of personnel. It was a decent experiment to try and, you know, get him up and move him around a little bit. And it's probably good for him to have some tape of him doing that, you know, going into the draft. But, you know, just from that perspective, but I think if you just think about it just as a pure team and scheme standpoint, I think you put him back on the line. I think you have a couple other people that can play the linebacker spot and still do the things you want to do defensively.
Yeah, yeah. And I said Taki on the line. He is a linebacker, but they moved him around a bit, which I think is defensive coordinator Nick Howell becomes more comfortable with the pieces that he has, if he can keep them at all healthy 1 week to next. You'll see, like they did with Ansah and Vannoy and Kaufusi, move them around, right?
Yep.
Move the talented player around and create matchup problems. And we definitely saw better defensive back play against UCF than we had seen against Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we were grading on a curve there, as it was not very good against Utah State. So let's move on to Nevada, or as back home they might say, Nevada. That ought to get some people all riled up. So Matt, let's talk about this. Let's learn a little bit about this Nevada football team. They have a quarterback, Fajardo, who is quite good, or has been good. He has been a little off this year. They are also a 3-3 team that didn't beat Southern Utah by that much, beat Washington State, which looked good, lost to Arizona, beat San Jose State, and then gave up 51 points to Boise in Reno, and then lost to what looks like a pretty decent Colorado State team. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being Mississippi State or Oregon, and 1 being Savannah State, how tough of an opponent do you think Nevada actually is based on what we've seen so far in their six games?
I'd probably put them in I'm going to sound really middle of the road here, but I'd probably put them in a 5.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I think they're a middle of the road FBS team. I think they're, you know, depending on what computer ranking you look at, they're somewhere in that 40 to 60 range of team. Their defense is not very good and their offense is okay. Besides Fajardo, they have a few other talented players, but this isn't, Fajardo is not Colin Kaepernick, right? I mean, he's good, but he's not that electric of.
Listen, I don't even think Colin Kaepernick is Colin Kaepernick.
That's
a debate for another day.
That could also be true, though. I watched his game last week. Man, when he is on, he is on. When he's off, it can be a little ugly. But when he is on,
he's off. He's pretty pedestrian.
Yeah, but when he is on, he threw like a back foot into the back of the end zone, I think to Bolden, where it was,
yep,
like,
I remember that pass.
Oh my gosh. You're just sitting there going, wow, can they actually do that? So Nevada is okay. BYU is a 10-point favorite according to most of the lines I've seen out of Vegas. So obviously, even without Taysom Hill, the experts are leaning in BYU's direction. So we're going to do a new game this week, Matt.
Oh, boy.
We're going to each make bold predictions, two each, and then the other is going to say, I agree with that bold prediction, it's right. You're going to say it's wrong, or you're not going to say it's only wrong, it's ridiculous. So this game is creatively called Right, Wrong, or Ridiculous. So I'm
all
very,
right,
very creative. So I will start out. I will give you a bold statement, and then you tell me whether you think I'm right, wrong, or ridiculous. Okay?
Okay.
Christian Stewart passes for more than 300 yards against Nevada. Right, wrong, or ridiculous?
I think it's wrong. I don't think it's quite ridiculous, but I don't see him quite getting north of 300 yards. I think he can get north of 250, but 300 is a lot of yards. That being said, I mean, even in a blowout, I don't know that he comes off the field. So maybe he does quite get there. So I'm not ready to point at you and say that's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I kind of see where you're coming from here. I just don't think it's very likely.
Mm. Yes, so far in his two games, granted only one of them a start, he's got 172 yards and 153 yards. He did, of course, throw three touchdown passes, including, I didn't know we had a tight end, Matt, but apparently we do still have tight ends that occasionally play.
Yeah, Stewart found him.
Well, and a nice, some nice catches by Mahina in that game, actually, showed the glimpses of what we thought, you and I both thought he would be at some point in his career, that just by scheme or by talent or by whatever, just hasn't happened. So, Matt, bold prediction time for right, wrong, or ridiculous.
What do you got my for bold, me? My bold prediction is also a Christian Stewart prediction, and it is that he passes for four touchdowns.
Four touchdowns? That's ridiculous!
Come on!
Well, maybe it's just wrong, but it's borderline, dude. The three touchdown passes, I would be shocked if he eclipses that at any point the rest of the year besides Savannah State. I think three is your upper limit, unless something else bizarre happens.
Even without a healthy Jamal?
Even without, well, yeah, even without a healthy Jamal. Even without a healthy Jamal. Okay. My next one. Are you ready?
Yep.
Here we go. Fred Warner makes 10 tackles, including three, for loss.
That's ridiculous.
Ridiculous?
I don't have stats here in front of me, but come on. Let's not get silly here.
I think Fred Warner is going to be awesome, and I think, just like last week, I said he needed to be a part of the game plan. I think this week is his coming out party. He had quite a few snaps. He's, you know, getting more time. And I think you're going to see a lot of linebackers rotated in and out. I think you'll see Elisa all over the place. Taki obviously is going to do a good job as well. But I think you're going to see a lot of Fred Warner. That's my bold prediction. All right. You got one more there, buddy. By the way, he had six tackles last week.
Okay. BYU scores two defensive touchdowns.
I think you're right.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think
Fajardo, like, that's pretty bold.
Fajardo has – it's totally bold. I'm, like, agreeing with something that I should be saying is ridiculous. But I'm agreeing with it. Fajardo has turned over the ball this year at a rate that is more than he had in previous seasons. So that may be just dumb luck, but sometimes we saw this with Max Hall his senior year and with some of the other quarterbacks BYU has had. Sometimes you just get in a rut where you think you see people open and they are not. And if Fajardo's in one of those, maybe we can get Rob Daniel taking one to the house.
Can you say that? I don't think you can say what you just said.
No, I probably shouldn't say it. All right. So Matt, that's our right, wrong, or ridiculous first ever time with that game.
It's a pretty good game. And I didn't even know the rules beforehand. I didn't even know this game existed.
Yeah, I know. I just came up with it this afternoon. That's what I was doing instead of doing my actual job. So, Matt, big prediction on this game. We'll start with this. The over-under is BYU by 10 points. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the over here.
You're taking the over?
I am.
All right, bold. I am taking the under, but let's go back to you for the score prediction.
Really? You're gonna go ahead and take the under here, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I think BYU wins this game 28-14.
28 to 14. So you think we put in a very good defensive effort in this one?
I do.
Awesome.
I think we do. And to hear that. I think we also play a little ball control, which will help.
Oh, yeah. And I think we will. I think, and you've seen it this year. The go fast, go hard, we've still, of course, done that, but it is not at the frantic pace that we did last year.
Nope.
There's definitely been more deliberate. I am going to say this is a bit of a shootout. I'm not as confident in the defense as you are. I'm going to say 34-28 for BYU. So still predicting a BYU victory on Saturday night. Not over under. Odds makers. We'll do odds makers here. What are the percent chance that you make it to the end of the game without falling asleep at all?
Oh, I won't fall asleep.
None?
Yeah, 0%.
What if it's a blowout?
I'll be like halfway into a 12-pack of Mountain Dews. I think I'll be all right.
I also will not fall asleep.
That, and you'll probably be texting me, and that'll keep me up.
That's true. I'm gonna actually watch that one live, because I also want to be flipping back and forth at the beginning to the Notre Dame Florida State game, which should be what, like the fourth quarter or so when that starts.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Something pretty close to that, depending on how the pace of the game goes. Speaking of that, let's go to the Twitter, the tweet bag. Jerem Jordan, that's at Jerem Jordan, who was just our guest, said, who is better looking between Spencer Linton and Jerem Jordan? I just don't want to... Jerem and I talked about this a little bit. I honestly am just taking a punt on that because Sweeney made it even more awkward. That's at Justin D. Sweeney. I think you should rank all previous guests by looks.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the middle of that, especially between Jerem and Spencer.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to harm their relationship, you know?
No, absolutely not.
We don't. But here is the question of the day, all right? Can we get a Torchy's Taco in Mississippi? That's from Johnny Dangerman, at Johnny Dangerman on Twitter. I did see this was favorited by the official Torchy Taco account.
Was it really?
Yes, it was. So John, they took notice. They took notice of that, Matt. How good are the tacos at Torchy Tacos?
Matt? They're damn good.
They are, I've heard. Unfortunately, I have not partaken because when we were down in Texas, instead we went to a Mexican restaurant in which a fight broke out. So that was fun.
Hey, listen, the fight aside... That was good food.
It was excellent Mexican food.
It was excellent food. My wife and I were talking about this the other day. We will be back to that restaurant.
It was quite good. I just it was kind of funny that we ended up quickly leaving at the end because some woman wanted to basically fight everyone in the restaurant.
Actually, that's exactly what she said. Yeah. That she was willing to do that exact thing.
Yes, laced with some other words.
She dressed it up a little bit, but the message was, I will fight all y'all.
Yes, yes.
There was some dressing in there, but that was the message.
Yeah, that was the message. So Sweeney asked another question. He said, Hill will allegedly be recovered in 4 to 6 months, probably too late for the combine. NFL or 2015 with BYU? Matt?
Taysom Hill comes back.
Oh, absolutely comes back. I think his throwing motion and some of that stuff is way too much of a question mark for him to even entertain without another year going to the NFL Combine. I don't think he's a first 3 or 4 round draft choice.
Yep.
Not yet. No. And that might have been different had he played the entire year.
Right.
But he didn't. So I definitely think he is coming back. So, Matt, let's look forward to the rest of the season, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the rest of the season, we're both predicting a win versus Nevada. But let's go out and project the rest of the year, okay?
Okay.
So, Nevada, we're both saying W. Boise State, win or loss at Boise on the Smurf turf on ESPN.
I feel like that's probably a win.
I'm going to say loss, but I reserve the right to, I would say like 45% chance of victory.
See, here's what's going to happen though. And we're going to run through here and I'm going to say win on a couple of these, but I feel like there is a game in here that maybe I just am not predicting correctly. That's going to be a loss.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's keep moving at Middle Tennessee State of the day after Halloween.
I think you get a win here.
Win. They're not any good. Yep. Provo, UNLV, win, right?
Win. Yep.
They're terrible. Savannah State, please don't insult my intelligence.
Are we still calling that a game or is it just a scrimmage?
I believe it's a scrimmage. I believe that they're just going to direct snap the ball to Nacua for the entire second half.
That could get interesting.
So we could have some fun. The interesting one is also at Cal, Matt.
I'm going to go ahead and throw my loss down right here.
See, I think we're going to lose two more. So I think we lose at California, and I think we lose at Boise State. If the defense really shows me something against Nevada, I may change my mind. But think about this for just a moment. Despite a pretty okay game, talk about damning with faint praise right there, for Christian Stewart, he's still on the year, is completing less than 50% of his passes, and less than 5 yards per pass attempt. Now, I know that 29 of those attempts came in a Utah State game that he got thrown in the fire, right? And I get that, and I'm not trying to be overcritical of him, but despite those 3 touchdown passes, he's still thrown more interceptions so far than touchdowns, and 4 interceptions in 66 attempts is not good.
No, that is not good.
If the defense cannot rise up a level, no pun intended actually there.
Oh, really? You just did the rise up thing?
No, I totally wasn't trying to do that on purpose. I'm not that clever. Then I may feel differently. I think we win one of those two games. But if this is a shootout against Nevada and it's the third week in a row that a mediocre to not very good offense has put up significant yardage against us, then I get pretty worried about those games. The Boise game, I'm on the fence just because their offense this year is a running offense, and the one thing we can do is stop the run.
Yes.
We got big guys in the middle, and we do a good job doing that. So anyway, I'm saying 2 more losses. So we'd end up with 4 losses and then go into the bowl game. Matt, if I had told you at the beginning of the year, and you're saying 3 losses, you think we lose 1 more.
Yeah, but I really feel like we lose 2 more. I just don't know what the second loss is.
Well, it's got to be Boise. We're not going to lose to UNLV.
There was something crazy could happen.
Well, I think this week is the game where something crazy could happen, right? Nevada's not terrible, right? If we turn the ball over 5 times, this could be that game, right? We're not that much better than Nevada.
Right, but I think that Nevada could be a loss. I think Boise State could be a loss.
Yeah.
And I feel like California probably is.
So if I told you at the beginning of the year that Taysom would get hurt middle through the year, that Jamal would miss time, Fua would miss significant time, Kafusi, Kurtz would never suit up. Well, I guess he technically played 3 plays against Utah State, but for most part, he never suited up. Jordan Johnson gets injured halfway through the year. Dallin Leavitt gets hurt. Bills gets hurt. Wouldn't you have taken 4 losses?
I would have taken just finishing the season, I guess.
You know, I think if they end up losing only 1 more time, this ends up being a pretty nice season. You get a
don't
chance.
You feel like we're like just putting a silver lining on something that, well, I mean, you know, almost like moral victories or
no.
Just...
What other choice you got? Taysom Hill's out. I mean, he's a, you know, once in a generation type of athlete, right? Him being out changes everything. And let's not even consider the scenario where Christian Stewart gets hurt. Yikes! Keep sliding, bud. Keep
that
sliding.
That scenario doesn't even exist.
Oh, it exists, my friend, and it's not good. It's not good. So, let's jump over to hoops, Matt. This is Wednesday night that we're recording. Friday night, I believe on BYU TV, will be aired Boom Shakalaka, which is not a tournament of NBA Jam, but instead it's a showcase.
Little bodies, tiny heads.
Yeah.
I mean, tiny heads, large head. What am I saying?
Tiny bodies, large heads.
That's what I was getting at.
Yes, that's actually my children and our entire family, actually. The Mangums have rather large heads. Actually, you know what's crazy? Our little baby, the four-month-old that you all the listeners heard a little bit of on the podcast with when I was talking with Jerem, she has a regular-sized head. It looks weird.
That is weird.
All of our kids have these massive heads, and now we've got this little kid with a normal-sized head. I don't know what to do with it. It's a little strange.
Well, she should hold that normal-sized head up high.
It'll be
because easier. It's easier to do so.
Yes, there's no doubt of that. So Matt, Boom Shakalaka, is this something that you care about?
It's fun. You know, it's fun to watch it. Am I rearranging my schedule to watch it? If I miss it, am I going to DVR it and watch it later? No.
No, I'm in the same camp. I will likely watch it just because my wife's out of town. Typically on a Friday night, we'd be doing a date night or something else. I'll likely watch it. But like you said, it's not something you're not going to really learn a lot about the team. Besides maybe learning some faces and of the new players. Matt, Sports Illustrated has predicted that Tyler Hawes will be the national scoring leader. If he ends up leading the nation in scoring, is that end up being good or bad for this team's chances of winning the West Coast Conference?
I don't know how that would be bad for this team's chances of winning the West Coast Conference. So I'm going to have to go ahead and say that's got to help.
Well, I was just going to, you know, possibly he's shooting too much because everyone else is terrible.
Yeah, I guess that could be the case. But I think looking at this team, I think if we're in that type of a situation, I think we've got a good team at that point.
Yeah, I'm with you, though. I think that actually means that he took some of those Carlino shots. He absorbs some of that shots and is filling the bucket. Or it also could mean that he's shooting more three-pointers, which I think would also be a great thing for the Cougars. Yeah. So I think it would be excellent. Plus, having the leading scorer just gets, as a program, you know, to over the last several years have had two guys lead the country in scoring, I think helps recruiting, helps your, you know, just your profile as a program.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
So, Matt, that's all I've got. Anything you wanted to talk about before we sign off?
No, I mean, it's, you know, here we come down the backstretch of the football season, and all too soon, my friends, there will be no more football. So let's enjoy what we've got while we have it.
Stop. I'm going to just watch old BYU games on a loop off of the BYU TV app. That's my plan.
Oh, boy.
That's my plan. Matt, I did, John, that's at Johnny Dangerman. He did ask us one thing. We're going to talk about our playoff predictions next week, but for some reason, the theme of this show is let's go back in time to the beginning of the season. So get in your DeLorean again, Matt. If I had told you that Mississippi State...
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
That's right. That's right, we don't. By the way, next year is the actual year that Marty McFly went to in Back to the Future 2, 2015.
That's weird.
And I'm telling you how depressing, we don't have flying cars or hoverboards.
I feel lied to.
Yeah, I feel like we've been betrayed. Anyway,
those hoverboards were supposed to be out like the next year.
Well, you know why
Thanks they weren't. Thanks for nothing, Mattel.
You know why they weren't. Moms. They wrote Mattel and said they couldn't have them. Do you remember that? You were probably too young. At the time, that was the big rumor, was that they existed, but moms, because I was like, at the time, I was like 9, right?
Yeah, well, moms are evil, obviously.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's the type of thing a 9-year-old would totally believe. Be like, yeah.
But, you know, they do have an hour of those shoes that you just put your feet in and they tight
lamp. That's true. Do they have jackets that dry?
Oh, the jacket would be sweet.
That would be cool, you know.
They do have those reflector hats, though. They've had that for a long time.
Yeah. Anyway. So if we went back in time to the beginning of the season, I told you that Ole Miss and Mississippi State would be top five teams at this point in the season. Wouldn't you have thought that, like, half of the SEC would have had to have, like, been disqualified or something?
Or then maybe they formed their own conference?
Yeah. The Mississippi Conference?
Yeah.
The Mississippi River Conference? I've watched now Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Those are good teams. I mean,
oh, they're very good.
I don't know. I think Mississippi State ends up losing to Alabama when they play them. I think it's in November. But these are good teams, and they could run the table. And if they do, we'll talk next week our predictions on the playoff. But I mean, anybody runs the table in the SEC, you're guaranteed, entrance into the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
But any other games you're watching this weekend besides Florida State and Notre Dame?
Texas A&M, Alabama. There's a couple of games. I'm actually putting together, we got a group of people, we're putting together a little tailgate for a few families. We're going to watch some games in the afternoon.
Oh, excellent.
So we'll have a TV up in the garage, a TV up in the house.
Excellent.
Grill some stuff. Should be a good time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I am definitely planning around Florida State.
Always a good one.
Oklahoma, Kansas State is kind of interesting early in the day. Ohio State and Rutgers. Oh, actually, that one's not interesting at all.
Even a little bit.
Aren't you so glad that the Big Ten added Rutgers and Maryland?
Totally worth it.
So well. TCU, man, was that? Did you see any of that TCU game this last week?
A little bit.
Heartbreak, man. Heartbreak for the Horned Frogs. Is it Horned? I always mess this up. Is it Horned Frogs or Horned Frogs?
I believe it's Horned.
Horned Frogs. I always mess that one up. Thanks for downloading, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!